I think it's focusing on the value that you bring and not being shy when you're confident in your value around asking for what you deserve.
The Women in Tech podcast is an independent production funded by you, the community. To support Women in Tech, if you believe in the vision as much as we do, please consider going to womenintechpodcast.com. That's womenintechpodcast.com, and just click on the contribution link to keep this podcast going. Thank you. Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast. I'm in Wilmington, North Carolina, and today I get to sit in this awesome film-like conference room for a company called Encino. It's an incredible tech brand here in Wilmington. And I have Trisha, who's going to tell us about Encino and about her history being a woman in tech. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for coming to visit us at the beach.
Yeah. Like, Wilmington's some secret spot that I was never on my radar before, and I think it should have been all this time.
It should have been. It wasn't on my radar either until I moved here last year, and what a pleasant surprise.
Where'd you move from?
I moved from the D.C. area.
Oh, wow. That's a huge difference.
Huge difference.
They don't have a cool beach in D.C.
See how tan I am?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just hang out there.
Yeah.
The thing is, I didn't know how not tan you were before.
It's true. I mean, I was still tan before, but I'm really tan now.
Tell me about, let's do a formal introduction. Tell me about Encino and you. So yeah, go for it.
Sure. I'm Trisha Price. Yeah. I head up product development and engineering at Encino. Encino is a software as a service company. We've been around for 5 years, and banks are our customers. We have the Encino Bank operating system that is, purpose is to digitize and make lending processes more efficient for banks.
Was it you I heard earlier today that got a journalism degree at Harvard? Was that you?
Actually, I got my master's from Harvard, but in software engineering.
Okay. That's undergrad insane. Was math. That's insane.
It's fun.
Okay. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about your role here in Encino. Let's talk about the move. Let's talk about when you first became passionate about technology. All the things.
Yeah.
You ready for all the things?
I love all the things.
Should we start at the beginning?
We should start at the beginning.
So you were a little girl.
I was a little girl.
Were you surrounded in a tech environment?
No. I was a little girl too early for a tech environment.
Okay.
I was good at math, and I liked math.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to college, I majored in math.
Right.
It was really, I didn't have an email account till my senior year of college.
Yeah.
So I kind of came before that. But lucky for me, I was graduating in the tech bubble.
Right.
Like really in the tech boom.
Yeah.
And so that even though I didn't have a computer science degree, I had taken a couple of computer science courses.
Right.
And so there, it was such a hot job market that I kind of fell into it.
I mean, you got a master's in Harvard. Like, that's nuts.
You know, it's funny. I don't think about it a lot.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've learned more from my experiences and the people around me.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of one of those things that I'm excited about, I know has given me a leg up in career choices and options. But at the same time, I really feel more proud of the products I've created,
right,
of the people I've mentored.
Right.
And I feel like that's such a bigger part of my life,
right,
than school. You know what I mean?
Do you think you need that kind of infrastructure to enter in the world of computer science and engineering?
No, totally not. I see some of the best engineers, best architects that work on our team that don't even have degrees in computer science.
And why did you make the choice to pursue it in that way?
You know, I think I had in my head at the time that I needed to, or maybe I just wanted to prove to myself that I could.
Yeah.
But it was never a pressure of getting a job and feeling like I didn't have the opportunities,
right,
I wanted to have. It wasn't a reaction negatively as much as a checkbox item that I had in my head I wanted to do.
Right. And you got the check.
I got the check.
The check went tick. And then you went from there. And then what was your next step professionally?
I worked for a couple of different financial services companies, mostly writing financial projection, mathematical modeling type software, kind of quants, data science stuff before that was a term.
Right.
And then after that, I went to my first product company, which is called Eagle Investment Systems. And I was a developer there and moved into a lead developer position and really just fell in love with combining mathematical financial concepts with technology and have since, this is the third financial services technology company I've worked for.
And at most of the places where you've worked, have you been a rarity there? Like, have there been an abundant amount of women in technology as well? Or
no, there is much more so at Encino than anywhere else I've ever been.
Yeah.
Most places I've worked have had abundant number of females in the company.
Yeah.
Mostly because I would choose only to go to work for places that had that mindset.
Right, right.
Because I know it is a rarity if you look at the numbers across the board, but I have chosen to go to open-minded companies with CEOs and founders that I knew respected women with an equal set, you know, seat at the table. But mostly when you look at the engineers and the true technical folks in the technical company, there's been lacking. But at Encino, our VP of engineering is a female. Lots of our heads of product management are female. So there's much more here than I've seen in the past.
And what's one empowering thing you could share with us? I know I feel so much for these engineers that have come up to me at meetups or hackathons that say, you know, because I'm one of the only women engineers, I feel like I don't fit in, or I feel like I can't be myself and all these things. What's one empowering thing you could give us, something that they could do to take action? Because I think we're all in charge of the environments we create, right? Sure. And sometimes it feels like we don't have control, but we actually have more control than we think. And so what's something that you suggest we can do if we are that person that, you know, we're one of the few, to create a more comfortable environment where we're just as approachable as we want others to be?
I mean, I think that's a great question. The authentic piece is key that you mentioned. And I think being authentic is important, man, woman, age, regardless. And really, it's leadership's job to create an atmosphere where everyone feels comfortable being authentic. And we spend too much time at the office to have a fake persona that's different when we're here than when we leave the office. And it's really important to me that we have a team of people that feel that they can act the same way at work than when they leave and they have fun with their friends.
Right.
And so that is true, feeling safe and authentic. So that is incredibly important to me and to us here at Encino. I think for women, that not everyone is fortunate enough to work in an environment like that. And it's not as simple as, well, go find one.
Right.
You need jobs, you need money, and it may be what's available to you at a given time. Now, I'll say if you can find one, do it. But if you can't, I do think people are more open to allowing you to be yourself than you think they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not everybody has a proactive approach to communicating it and fostering it.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's up to us. It's up to each and every one of us to make the change we want to see.
Yeah.
And you know, you really just have to go for it. And 100%. Rarely do you see people shut that down.
Yeah. And people are always stunned and in disbelief when I say that I'm an introvert too. Like, I'm an introvert with extroverted capabilities. The reason why I believe I'm an introvert is because I recharge by being alone. Like, I have to be alone or I'll like freak out, you know? And when I'm around a lot of people, even though I can carry myself well most of the time, I'm exhausted. Just totally, it does not energize me. And so I'm saying that because I also enter a room sometimes and I just don't have the extroverted thing going on for me that particular day or night. And I just feel like I feel so alone in a room and I feel like so afraid to talk to anybody and I feel like everybody will judge me and I like, you get really sweaty and you're like, I just want to leave. I can't stand being here. And the reason why I'm sharing this is because if you're introverted like me and you're in a workspace where you feel like everyone is judging you or doesn't want to talk to you or all these things, these storylines that we make up in our head, I think like listening to you speak and listening to the honest conversation that we're having, like trying to just open up and go to someone and just seeing what actually happens rather than like believing the stories that we create for ourselves. And like you said, more times than not, you'll be surprised how receptive somebody is to you saying hello or saying, hey, but you know, I always think it's important to put myself out there and like unmask the,
it is,
you know,
and, yeah. And it's important for those of us who are extroverted or even are introverted, but aren't shy in a one-on-one setting. Yeah. When you see someone needing it, reach out, right?
Totally.
Women supporting women is so important.
Yeah.
And when you see someone who you know is struggling or you can kind of tell might be, you know, ask them to go to lunch, right? And
just 100%.
It's all about encouraging each other and fostering that supportive network.
Mm-hmm. Even guys, like guys just – the problem is – actually, I would love an empowering conversation about this for a second before we carry on with like your history. I think what you just said is so key, is like we should support one another. But I'm really big on like being inclusive of guys too, right?
Totally.
And but then there's that thing, especially in the workplace. So if you could give us an empowering suggestion for this, that would be awesome. A guy asking a girl to lunch could be misconstrued as harassment or a date, which is unfortunate in this world that like a guy just can't be nice without worry that he's going to overstep some political boundary because other people have messed it up for everybody else.
Yeah.
How would you suggest a guy could approach that in a very safe way for both him and for her so that there could be a more collaborative community experience within the workplace?
I think there's a couple ways that come to my mind. One is, if it's the first time and you don't know the person well, include others until you get to know each other.
Good point.
And I think if you know someone, then you know where their intentions are coming from and it doesn't feel uncomfortable. I see guys and girls together go out to lunch all the time around here, but they all know each other well. We work in a close collaborative mm-hmm. environment, and so it would never be misconstrued
right.
because people know each other. They know each other's husbands and wives or significant others.
Yeah.
I think the other way to do it, because that's not always an option mm-hmm. or might take too long and you think someone needs it today.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as you're there, bring up your significant other or a date you've had. Like, you know, you put off a vibe. And I think people really quickly pick up on a vibe of comfort or discomfort.
Right.
And I think people can generally read your intentions. It gets back to the authentic piece that we were talking about earlier. If you ask a girl to lunch because you're trying to be more inclusive and you're being authentic about it and doing it for the right reasons, I feel like that comes through for people and settles people's comfort level pretty quickly.
100%. I love it. I love the openness of this conversation. I love that it's kind of like suspending our preconceived notions of what something is stereotypically or what we read about the news. And it's like, let's just pretend this world really wants to be collaborative and connected. And let's pretend we all want to help, you know, one another grow. What does that kind of society look like? Okay. So you discover Encino. Where did you discover Encino?
I discovered Encino, the last financial services technology product company that I worked for. I worked there for 8 years, loved it, amazing company. And we had a mutual customer. And through that, I ended up getting introduced to Pierre, our CEO. And so sort of customer introduction
right.
and saw where Pierre was on a growth trajectory and a size of company and a point of maturity.
Mm-hmm.
So I came here and met the rest of the executive team and was just really attracted to the overall vibe, product they were creating, and company culture.
What is a strong job description that would attract a female engineer? What does a job description look like that would attract you?
That's a great question. I think job descriptions are hard, but to me, it's being a part of creating something that's changing an industry and doing it in a collaborative, fun way. When you can see the fruits of your labor truly changing how an industry operates. For us, it's banking, right? When you can see that they can do things and provide services to their customers like you and I that they couldn't do before. And you just think about even how you interact with your bank versus how it happened 10 years ago versus 20 years ago. I mean, this is an industry that's truly changing and will continue to change dramatically. I mean, sitting there writing code, sitting in your cube.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing day in and day out. But when you're solving really hard problems and you can see progress, and especially in SaaS today, how you write something and in such a short period of time, it's out there and it's actually being executed on in your customers' environments and changing an industry. To me, that's what gets me excited about coming to work every day. It's that and the people.
I went to LaunchFest. You know LaunchFest?
No.
It's a tech conference in San Francisco.
Okay.
And there was a speaker on how to write, not necessarily job descriptions for women, but how to write job descriptions to attract the kind of person you want. Mm-hmm. And I think more times than not, we don't look at job descriptions as an opportunity for creative writing on how to become. We look at it in a very selfish, like, I want. But you need to be thinking about the receiver.
Yeah.
Like, who are they? What kind of culture are they looking for? What kind of, what kind of passion are they looking for? What kind of community are they looking for? Like, what kind of skill sets do they want to pursue, et cetera, so forth? And what matters to them in the world? How do they feel safe? And then when you create that type of writing, then it will resonate. He said, you want to write a job post that is shareable.
Yeah. that's great. I think you've made me think a little bit about putting more energy into our job descriptions beyond just what we're looking for and sort of your typical items, because I feel like we have so much more to offer and the kind of people we want to come here are so special that I feel when they get on the phone and talk to us or they come visit us, they feel our vibe and they know what we're doing.
Right.
But I doubt that comes through in a job description for us. And so I feel like I need to write a to-do item when I walk out of here to go look at my job description.
I'm sorry. That's
okay. We need more things
like
to do.
Like you needed one more thing to do. Yeah.
But that's okay. It's a great point.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So you get, happy to have helped. So you get to Encino and you love it.
I love
and
it.
And you start. And so
best place I've ever worked.
Amazing.
Yeah. I'm so lucky.
I mean, and it's a 300 person company-ish.
Yep. Okay. 330.
What makes you say that you're so lucky? What is it about here? And well, remind me, how long have you been here? Sorry.
I've been here about 15 months.
Okay.
The reason I feel lucky is there are so many startups, and there are even many companies that, maybe get to a certain revenue mark and plateau. But it's hard. It's hard to keep the growth trajectory. And we've had the good fortune of having very significant triple-digit revenue growth every year since we started over the last 5 years. And that is just fun. I mean, that is just so fun to be a part of. The problems we're solving are scaling and getting new product out and making a large customer base happy and keeping our customer success focus in spite of our growth.
Yeah.
And we just opened our office in London.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And keeping our culture and focus there.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the problems. Like, do you call those problems, right? That we get up every day and think about. And I feel so lucky for those to be the problems that I'm faced with every day.
That's so cool. Yeah. And a bit of a personal question. Do you personally gain from the company growing other than emotional fulfillment? Like, are you tied in, like, as the company grows financially, do you get to grow as well?
Absolutely.
Because I heard in Los Angeles, I can't remember who I was speaking to. It was an engineer that said, I don't feel appreciated because I essentially over the past, they've been really committed to the company, but they've been in 5 years or something. And I don't grow with the company. They just want more from me, but like they don't want me to be a part of their growth. And I just kind of assumed if you're an engineer, you just by default get to be a part. I didn't know that it was this thing that you get axed out and or never get it in the first place.
You know, it's true. I mean, not every company has a philosophy of sharing their success with their people and thanking their people for the success of the company. And I do feel that I have significant financial gain based on the company's success. And I think almost every employee here would say the same.
And, that's awesome.
And that is important. That is exciting to dream and think about the next step for your family and your life and to feel like there's a lot to gain from it financially. I think in addition to the emotional fulfillment and the financial fulfillment, the other big piece for me is I've learned so much career-wise. Right. Like, even though I've done similar roles at other companies,
right,
we're doing it different this time.
Yeah.
And I'm learning something from that too. I feel like every day I learn something, whether that's from a peer or from a customer or from someone on my team as we solve something. Yeah. I do feel there's a lot of career growth as well.
I feel like you're saying like three things are key. A mentorship culture. Mm-hmm. We talked about this a little bit yesterday at the talk, but like a mentorship culture, a spirit of ownership, like almost like a founder-esque, like you're part of of the creation, and then feeling like it's an inclusive environment that's empowering to you, where you feel really connected as a community to your coworkers.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Totally.
Yeah.
You got it.
So I feel like that's like the magic formula to making someone happy.
I agree.
Guy or girl.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's just feeling appreciated every day, right? Feeling like you're a part of it. Feeling like you have a voice. And I think obviously people can't feel empowered in a voice if they don't feel appreciated. So maybe that's a given in the things you said.
Yeah.
But it is important for people to feel they make a difference and that that's acknowledged and noticed.
Totally. Or I know this is totally random on this podcast. I'm obsessed with love languages. Do you know it?
No.
What? Okay. So love languages is like I guess it starts as like a romantic thing, but I apply it like to my mom or just it's like a communication tactic. So I'm going to go into it because you say, you know, being appreciated. And for me, one of my top two love languages is appreciation. It's called affirmations and acts of service. But there's some people that I've met that don't want the verbal appreciation. They want something else. And I think it would be really interesting. And I'm about to share with you like these love languages. Do you want to hear?
Yes.
Like,
I
think really it would be really interesting that if as a company, they would find out somehow what, or maybe even just give them the quiz, each one of their staff members, like primary love languages are, so they could better communicate with each staff member. For instance, like my mom's primary love language is gift giving. So like, there's nothing my mom would feel more loved by than me giving her flowers, giving her whatever. And she wants it wrapped with the card and the ribbons, you know? And growing up, it would like infuriate me. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, and she gives me gifts too. And I'm like, you can't love me through gifts, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
But like learning the love languages, I'm like, oh, this is just how she communicates. It's not like she's not trying to love me through. This is just her. Like for me, my friend Eben helped me fix my car, you know, or you know, even saying your talk was great for me. Like that's my driver. So love languages. So there's, I think, five love languages. It's gift giving, acts of service, which is like doing, running a task or an errand or a favor. Quality time, so spending time together, physical touch, which in a workplace could be like a handshake or a hug or, well, I'm a hugger, but like a handshake, you know, it doesn't have to be romantic. And, okay, so acts of service, quality time, physical touch, gift giving.
Affirmation.
An affirmation. Yeah. So five. And so my top two are affirmation and acts of service. And so I've worked with a company before that they had zero affirmation going on. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't function. It's like
it's my
fuel.
Top two.
Yeah. Oh, those are your top two as well?
I've never done the quiz, but I know.
Yeah. You don't have to do a quiz.
Affirmation.
I just don't know how like an employer would find out unless they like,
you know, it's funny. We don't.
What are your top two though?
I don't know. I've never even heard of it, but I just know I'm an affirmation person for sure.
Do you have any of those resonate with you of another top one?
Yeah. I mean, probably the others would be either quality time or acts of service for me. Like
cool.
I'm definitely not a gifts person. Like it kind of,
and like quality time could be, again, in the mentorship culture, mentoring is a form of quality time. So that's why I say, like, I think this was derived out of a romantic notion, but I like to think about it outside the box in just a general communication knowledge base. And so I look at mentorship culture as quality time. I look at like my mom's like gift, you know, it doesn't have to be like, you know, something from a romantic partner, et cetera. So, yeah. Okay.
It's funny. We do a predictive index, which is not the same, but it's understanding different people's behaviors and the way they think.
Right.
And we ensure everyone in our department has taken it, and we ensure the managers of those folks have seen it.
Yeah.
Because whether it's love and relationships like you're talking about, yeah, or at work where you actually spend more time with people than you do in your relationships.
Right, right.
You got to know what makes someone tick. You got to know what they need. And it is a give and take relationship similar to other kinds of relationships, romantic relationships, friendships. And so it is, to me, I want to look at this and think about it a little more, because we do believe firmly in the predictive index. At other companies, I've used strengths-based leadership, which similar.
Yeah.
And I think the key there is understanding the people you're spending time with in a work environment, understanding what they need to feel good and to want to be somewhere, and changing your communication style and management style, et cetera, based on what other people around you need is the key there, whether it's love languages or strengths-based leadership or predictive index. I think it's all kind of just bringing it to the forefront of our mind of every person who works here is an individual, and understand what their needs are when you work with them.
Totally. I think it's so interesting how the concept, it doesn't matter how you say it. It matters how it was received.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
Before we wrap up our conversation, I think a really important thing to address, because it's something you've had to deal with quite a few times now in your life, is how do you negotiate your salary?
That's a great question. I think, well, the first thing you do is you prove your worth and your value.
How do you do that?
So to me, that's just in your daily actions, right? So don't ask for something when you haven't proven what you're worth or what value you're bringing to the organization. And your number one thing you do every day is, how do you make the lives of your customers and your coworkers and your boss easier? Mm-hmm. And you bring everything to work that you can to do those things. And when you've done those things, you should feel confident in your value. Mm-hmm. And when you're confident in your value, having a salary conversation is and should be very natural. And it's, this is what I do. This is the value I bring. This is the market and what the market is paying. And this is what I feel I should be paid.
Yeah.
And I think, especially as a female, there are folks who tend to either not believe in their value or not want to express and communicate and advocate the value that they're bringing, because it feels uncomfortable or pushy or aggressive, or these silly words that in males may seem to be a compliment and in females seem to be a negative connotation. Mm-hmm. And I think you got to get that out of your head. Mm-hmm. And I think it's focusing on the value that you bring and not being shy when you're confident in your value around asking for what you deserve. And that's so important.
Okay, my final question before, you know, you share with everybody how to connect with you. Let's say I walk in to get to ask for that raise, or even, you know, I know an employer wants to hire me for a job, and the last little piece is we have to agree on a salary. Mm-hmm. And let's say they aren't on board with giving us what we want, or they simply don't have the budget, but what we hear is they're not on board. Yeah. It may be a budget thing, right? But like, we just hear like, oh, like, what do we do? Do we need to be prepared to walk out? What set of questions do we ask ourselves to help ourselves in making a decision when we can't have the number that we want?
I think that's a great point. Personally, I've made the choice multiple times in my career to go to a company where I didn't get the salary that I thought I should get. But I believed in the company and I believed they were being fair. Meaning, I don't feel that they were paying me less because I'm a female or they didn't see my value. It's what made sense for them as a company at the time. Mm-hmm. And whether that's because of budget reasons or because of another employee and what they made and longevity or whatever their reasons were, I believed they were fair and they were transparent with why, and that there was a path forward, and that it was the company I really believed in from a culture as well as a growth perspective. And, you know, there's the quote, if you're offered a seat on a rocket ship, don't ask which seat, just get on. and I believe in that a little bit, right? So I do think, while I am a big advocate for women asking for what they deserve and for being their own voice, not just financially, right, but in all facets of life and career. I do think it's okay to take less than you want in certain circumstances. If you believe you're on the rocket ship,
right,
and you believe that the company is going to be fair and get you there as it's reasonable for them on the trajectory that they're on. And so I think it's about having the confidence, the faith, and the trust that you're getting on the rocket ship and you're joining the right culture and place and you believe in those things. The other things will come as long as you provide the value that the company needs.
I love it. How can people connect with you?
Probably easiest way is LinkedIn. Trisha Price. Come find me on LinkedIn.
Can you spell it out for us?
Sure. Trisha, T-R-I-S-H-A, Price, P-R-I-C-E, again with Encino. You can find me on LinkedIn and connect there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast.
Thank you for coming to Wilmington and joining us at the beach.
I know.
We're happy to have you here.
Thank you. If you guys want to connect with more extraordinary women in tech, check out the Women in Tech Facebook group at womenintechvip.com. It takes you straight to the Facebook group, so you don't have to go through 1 million Facebook groups figuring out which Facebook group we mean. Just go to womenintechvip.com. It'll forward you straight there. I will talk to you guys, hear you guys, see you guys, all the things in the next episode. Remember, tweet hello at Women in Tech Show. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Huge shout out and thank you to Betalist. Betalist is amazing. I've used Betalist for my past startups. Betalist gains you early traction to your startup while it's still in beta. Go to betalist.com/wearelatech. That's betalist.com/wearelatech. Thank you for powering the We Are LA Tech podcast.
The Women in Tech podcast is an independent production funded by you, the community. To support Women in Tech, if you believe in the vision as much as we do, please consider going to womenintechpodcast.com. That's womenintechpodcast.com, and just click on the contribution link to keep this podcast going. Thank you.